Record, spotlight, and now you have to go back to gallery. All right, I'm going to zoom back out because I do not like the zoomed in look. Okay. Fine. Okay. A couple of housekeeping items for tonight. Our goal is to finish our discussion of chapter 19. God willing, is my intent. Hopefully we'll get through it all. Next Monday, I am out of town, so there is no shiur next Monday. That is March 4th, I believe. I will send out a calendar reminder by email that there is no class next week, but just bear that in mind. That is my goal to finish this unit tonight. Okay, let's jump in. We ready? Okay, share screen. We are good to go. Everybody see the screen? Okay. The last thing we were discussing, I don't know if we got into the There was one piece I missed out on last week, and that was we were talking about the three events that happen in between David's initial invitation, or that are recorded in the text, in between David's initial invitation to the tribes to come back and join together in this kind of bringing David back to Yerushalayim. So the tribes of Israel, B'chol Shevtei Yisrael, they're having this conversation, and David sends a message to Zikne Yehuda, saying to them that the tribes of Israel are coming back bringing me back to Yerushalayim. You need to be part of that conversation. And he says, Achai atem atzmiu v'saviyatem, you are my brothers, you are my flesh and blood. You lamet you achonim leshivat lamelach, why should you be last to the party? And Lamasa, he turns to Amasa ben Yeter, who is the general who ran the rebellion of the army of Avshalom after Achitophel killed himself. And David extends that same invitation to him. And he says to him, Yoav, I will make you my general. And he says to the commander of the army of Avshalom, I will make you my general. I will replace Yoav with you. David's been trying to replace Yoav for a long time, so now he gets to replace him with Amasa. And in so doing, he kind of coaxes Ish Yehuda, coaxes the heart of the people of Judah, Ki'ish Echad, as one, and he brings them back. And of course, that leads to their jumping the gun one step further and crossing over the Yarden and meeting David on the other side in order to come back to Gilgal. So eventually they're going to meet in Gilgal, but with the rest of the tribes of Israel. In the meantime, Judah goes across and brings David back. We spent some time talking about the significance of crossing the Yarden, and then we talked about the other events that are embedded into this story. So one event is the story of Shimi ben Gera. He was the individual from the tribe of Benjamin who had cursed David as David was leaving Yerushalayim. And now he comes back to David on the other side of the Yarden, very contrite, very apologetic, saying he's sorry, he didn't mean it, and forgive him. And David, Avishai wants to kill him. And David says, no, this is a day for coronation. This is a day for celebration. We're not going to kill anybody today. And he forgives him and he promises that he will spare his life. And the other individual who comes with him is Tziva, the servant of the house of Shaul. And that's sort of a prelude to what will happen later, although it's recorded here. And that is the conversation with Mephibosheth. And that's what we spoke about last week, that Mephibosheth ben Shaul, the son of Yonatan, the son of Shaul, who was crippled and who, as David had extended that kindness to live in the palace and to eat at David's table, In the meantime, when David was running you from Yerushalayim, Tziva came of Mephibosheth, did not, and David was very angry at Mephibosheth for that. And so when he returns to Yerushalayim, he challenges Mephibosheth and he says to him, Lama lo alachimi Mephibosheth, why didn't you come with me? And Mephibosheth explains to him that he was tricked by Tziva. David is not interested in the answer, and David issues this famous remark, Lama tidaber od dvarecha amarti ata v'tziva tachluku et hasadeh. Enough talk. I don't want to hear it anymore. You and Tziva, I've decided, we'll just divide the estate of Shaul. And unfair and unjust, and nonetheless, that's what he declares. And that's more or less what we got up to last week. Agreed? Yes? All right. So the one postscript to the story that we didn't get to, but I want to kind of run through it quickly because it's not, I just need to sort of acknowledge that it's here. I really want to move on to the next piece. But the third story that's recorded here is this conversation with Barzillai HaGiladi. Barzillai was the individual who had brought provisions to the army of David in Machanaim before the war with Avshalom. David arrived tired and exhausted and out of provisions. And Barzillai came to the rescue. He was there and he brought he sort of expressed his loyalty to David by bringing him those provisions. Barzillai zaken ma'od ben shmonim shana v'chilkal et ha'melech b'shivato b'machanayim. He brought provisions with him to the king in Machanayim. He was 80 years old. Ish gadol u'ma'od. He was very wealthy. V'yomer ha'melech el Barzillai. Now the king says to Barzillai, why don't you come with me and I will provide you provisions and I'll sustain you in Yerushalayim. Says, I'm an old man, I'm 80 years old. I'm going to go cross over, I'm going to go with you all the way to Yerushalayim. Ben shmonim shana anochi hayom haida ben tov laba. I can't. I'm 80 years old. I'm the expression in Yiddish of a bottle. I'm done. I'm not gonna. Don't waste your investment in me. Ha'edab and tov l'ra. I'm losing my. I'm can't discern between good and evil. Im yimat avdechat asher achal v'tasher eshte im eshma od b'kol shalim v'shavot. I can't even taste food or drink or what I eat, what I drink, I don't hear anymore. I should be a burden to the king. I just want to cross over the Jordan with you. I want to bring you home back to the land of Israel, but you do not need to pay me this reward. I will go back and die in my own city. Kever aviv imi, my ancestral burial plot. However, he says, Hine avdecha kimham. However, here is your servant Kimham. Kimham is the name of Barzillai's son. He says, Yavonim adonai melech, let him cross with the king. And you can pay him whatever kindness you would have paid to me. So there's sort of this irony that David's being offered the opportunity to repay the kindness to Barzillai via his son Kimham, in the same breath that he had tried to honor his commitment to Yonatan by honoring Yonatan's son Mephibosheth. But at this point, he's turned on Mephibosheth. On the other hand, he will bestow that kindness upon Kimham. So there's a certain irony in this turn of events. So he said, let Kimham will come with us. I will do that which is good. So they cross over the Jordan, they kisses Barzillai, gives him a hug, says goodbye to him, he blesses him. And comes over the Jordan to Gilgal, and he brings Kimhan with him, together with Am Yehuda, and together with the people of the tribe of Israel, meaning Binyamin, that were with him, those 1,000 people who came with Shimi ben Gera. Okay, that's the story of Barzillai, and the story is sort of what I call vintage David. If you want to see a glimpse, a spark of the old vintage David who bestows kindness upon people, who's all about chesed, and kind of the old David before the spiral of the story of Bathsheba led to where he is today. His payment to Barzillai Giladi is a classic example of vintage David. Unfortunately, his treatment of Mephibosheth, less so. But certainly his treatment or his response to Barzillai Giladi is still classic chesed of vintage David. Which brings us to the final part of the story and the most important part for our discussion, which is the fateful meeting between the tribes of Israel and the tribes of Judah. So to paint the scene, David is now crossing over the Jordan. He's probably already wearing his crown because either he never took it off, or once the people of Judah came to him, he put his crown back on. And he is crossing over together with all of Judah and a handful of the people of Benjamin. V'nei kol ish Yisrael ba'im al ha'melech. Behold, he is greeted by the tribes of Israel, by the ish Yisrael, by the men of Israel. V'yamru al ha'melech. So the ish Yisrael says to the king, Madua gnavucha achenu ish Yehuda. Why have you let our brothers, the people of Judah, steal you away from us? V'yaviru et ha'melech bet beto at ha'yarden. So that they should come across the Jordan, they together with the king and his household. We were meeting in Gilgal. The plan was to do it all here. And now you come across the Jordan as if you were already king enthroned by the people of Judah. And now you come across with your entourage and your tribe and your people and you come here. So the people of Judah answered the people of Israel and said, what are you talking about? King is very close to us. It's not exactly true, given the fact that the tribes of Israel were the first ones to offer to bring David back, and David had to beg them not to find themselves embarrassed by tribes of Israel agreeing to David's return, and Judah not so. But okay, karov elech amelech elai. V'lam v'sachar elecha, why should this bother you? Have we eaten from the king's cost? Has he given any gifts to us? Is it not a financial benefit? We are the king's family. We are the tribe of Judah. So the people of Israel answered the people of Judah and said, we have 10 times the portion and the claim to the king and to David than you do. Because we're 10 tribes, you're only one. Madua kilitani, why have you belittled us? Were we not the first to offer to bring David back? The words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel, and the fight went on, and there is no resolution to this fight, and the chapter ends here. And you have to really ask yourself the obvious question, which is, what was David thinking? I mean, of all of the mistakes of David's career, if you will, Bathsheba being the biggest, of course, but certainly at this moment, he knows that the goal is to unite the tribes of Israel together. He knows the goal is to bring the tribes of Israel together under the banner of one king once again, and after the rebellion of Absalom, and here he sows the seeds of discontent and conflict by inviting Shevet Yehudah over the Yarden to come with him and then to meet up with the rest of the tribes of Israel. And on top of that, if we go back to the original conversation, not only does he invite them, but he invites them with a certain kind of closeness, and he says to them, "Atem atzmiu v'sariyatem, achi achayatem, my brothers, my bone, my flesh, my blood, you are my brothers." And then he turns to Amasa and he tries to replace Yoav with Amasa ben Yeter, who was also part of the rebellion of Absalom, and he says the same thing, "Atzmiu v'sariyata, you are my bone and my flesh." So he's certainly playing the family tribal card, which is very odd for David, right? If you remember when they, the irony is that when they came to David to offer him to become king of all of Israel, back in, this is Shmuel Bet chapter 19. If we go back to Shmuel Bet chapter 5, Shmuel Bet chapter 5 is when, after, if you remember, after the death of Shaul, there was a moment where they weren't sure what was going to happen to the kingdom, and Shaul's son, Ishbosheth, was crowned king temporarily out there in Machanaim, by the way. And his kingdom kind of spread into the northern tribes of Israel, and David was king in Judah in Hebron. And for 7 years, that was the stage. And there was a civil war between the forces of Avner and the forces of Yoab. And eventually, Avner was killed, and eventually, Ishbosheth was killed. And finally, the tribes of Israel come back to David. And they said to him, what did they say to him? This is the tribes of Israel. This is Shevet Shiftei Yisrael. They say to David, Hinenu atzmecha ubisarcha anachnu. We are your bone and flesh. We are one people. Which is exactly the argument, the language that David used to favor the tribe of Judah, which is an ironic twist, right? Not to be overlooked. Just to understand the context here, it's very important to understand what leadership means in the world of Tanakh. There are essentially two models of political leadership in the biblical arena. The alternative to the two models are essentially a shofet and a melech. And without getting into all the halachic issues and all the nuances, etc., the basic core difference between the world of the shofet and the world of the melech is that the world of the shofet is tribal or regional, and the melech is by definition national. At the end of the day, that's the issue. The issue is not whether you have a king or you have a democracy. Democracy doesn't exist yet. Democracy hasn't been invented yet. Right? The issue in the context of Tanakh, what kind of leadership you have, is whether you have what the Torah calls a nasi, in the language of the rest of Tanakh, we call a shofet, which is tribal or regional, or you have a melech who is national. So David, his first 7 years, was king over the tribe of Judah. It was more like a shofet. So they come to him now and they say, that's Machob, we are one people. What bone and flesh? We're all one. You may be from the tribe of Judah, we may be from the tribe of Naphtali and Asher, etc., Kol Shiftei Israel, but we're one people. Not only that, Gam Atmol, Gam Shoshon, B'yot Shaul, Melech Aleinu, Atayita, Motzi, Ve'amevi. Even when Shaul was king, and you were just the lowly son-in-law, but you were the warrior. You were the one who led us in and out of battle, right? We knew that. And we knew that God said to you that you would be the leader of Israel. Vayomer Hashem lecha, Ata tiret amit Yisrael, Ve'ata. Israel, it's time for you to be prince, to be king over all of Israel. Vayavo kol ziknei Yisrael el hamelech Chevrona vayichlot lahem hamelech David brit b'Chevron vayimshichu et David lamelech Yisrael. So they came to anoint David in Hebron over the entire people of Israel. So for 7 years he reigned in Hebron, and for the next 33 years he reigned over all of Israel. Where? Right, in Hebron for 7 years, and the next 33 years he reigned in Jerusalem. Why? Because what's the first thing David did when they asked him to become king over all of Israel? What's the very first thing David did? He went to conquer Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was a Jebusite stronghold. Yerushalayim was an abandoned city from the perspective of the Jews. Yerushalayim had never been conquered. Yerushalayim was a border city between Judah and Binyamin. And if you wanted to unite the two warring factions of Shevet Yehuda and Shiftei Yisrael, the way to do it was to move your capital to the city that kind of united the two kingdoms together. That was the raison d'etre for David. That was his whole purpose of existing as Melech, to unite all the tribes of Israel. Shaul was supposed to do it. Shaul didn't. So David took on that role to unite the tribes. And but all under the guise or under the phraseology of Hinenu atzmecha u'b'sarcha anachnu. How ironic is there, therefore, that David uses the same phrase, Atzmi uvesariatem, to sow the very seeds of discontent that he tried to avoid back in chapter 5, which is to say to Shevet Yudah, you are my tribe, and everybody else is secondary. And it's just so out of character for the very essence and core of what David has devoted his life to. It really begs the question of why. What's motivating David to do this? And what are the implications of this moment in action? In fact, characteristically, this what I would say would be the norm. Most kings of Israel behave the way David did here. I mean, most kings in history tend to favor their family, tend to favor their own people, their own politics and loyalty. In today's world, it's all about politics and loyalty, right? That's everything today. In time of Tanakh, wasn't that different? I'll give you an example. Take a look, for example, in Shmuel Aleph. It's a story we actually read once before in a different context. But sorry, I'm rushing through it a little bit because I really want to make sure we finish this today. But Shmuel Aleph Perek Chof Bet, when Shaul is chasing David, when Shaul is king and he's chasing after David, trying to kill him, and David is hiding. Agav, where is he hiding? He's hiding in the tribes in the region of the tribe of Judah. Right, there's a lot of loyalty to Judah at that time, and so at that moment, Shaul hears that David was hiding in a particular place. Vayomer Shaul Avadav. Make sure I'm in the right place. Shmuel Aleph Chof Bet Zayin. Yeah, Vayomer Shaul Avadav Anitzavim Alav. So Shaul turns to all of his servants who are standing around him, and he says to them, Shimuna b'nei Yemini, listen to me, my Benjaminites, my fellow tribesmen. Gam lekulchem yiten bein yishai sadot ukramim, lekulchem yasim sarim alefim vasarim meot. You think that David will give you fields and vineyards? You think that David will make you officers in his army? That you have all conspired against me to side with David? Look at the context. Shaul chasing after David. Shaul is trying to find David. Nobody's telling him where David is. Nobody's telling on David, right? Nobody is tattling on him. And Shaul is looking for the spies. He's looking for some information about David, and he's not getting it. So he turns to all the officers standing around him happen to be fellow tribesmen from Shevet Binyamin. Is that ironic? Right? And he turns to them and he says, you think David's going to be so kind to you? You think David's going to give you the kind of favors, fields and vineyards and wealths and positions of stature and power that I gave you? That you should side with David against me? That's norm. That's the norm. Right? That's normal. Most kings, that's what they do. They favor their own people who brought them into power. David wasn't like that. Shaul knew that David wasn't like that. But David wasn't like that. David offered, right, to unite the tribes of Israel. That's what he wanted to do. He came to Jerusalem to bring them all together. And so suddenly in chapter 19 of Shmuel Bet, suddenly he turns to Shevet Yudah and he says to Shevet Yudah, I'm one of you. You are my kinsmen. You should be first to anoint me as king. Look, it'll be good for you. And I'll make Amasa ben Yeter my general, and how great it will be when we're back together. Oh, big family reunion. And in the meantime, the only price I have to pay for it is an eternal war with the tribes of Israel. That's terrible. What's driving this agenda? This surprising context for David. So what's the option? What do we think the what's driving David's mission, purpose? Why is he being so kind to the tribe of Judah, given the price he has to pay in terms of the rest of the tribes of Israel? What do you think? What are our options? Why are you being so kind to the rest of the tribes of Israel? No, to the tribe of Judah. Extraordinarily So, right, we're going to see how the consequences of this act are very dramatic. But why
Because
did he do so?
Avshalom was very close to the tribe of Yehuda, and David just ordered the death of Avshalom. So he's worried
Technically, he
that,
didn't order the death of Avshalom. Technically,
but he
Yoav
caused
did.
it by attacking.
Right. But he did win the war, and that is true. Right. That's certainly the simplest and most direct explanation, which is to remember that Avshalom used that discontent in the tribe of Judah to seed his rebellion. At that moment, and this is really the question, when David was approached by the tribes of Israel, he had been 7 years, he was king in Hebron. The tribes of Israel show up and they say to David, "Let's one big happy family. Let's be united." And David says, "That's perfect. Yes." He picks himself up, leaves Hebron, moves to Jerusalem. If you were the tribe of Judah, you were not consulted. You were not asked. You did not offer an opinion. You're king. You, for all of those years, you harbored David, you protected David, you created a following around David, and then he became your king in Hebron over the tribe of Judah. And then suddenly the enemy camp, the king, the tribes of Israel, they show up one day and they say, "Oh, you know what? Let's make peace." What do? You pick yourself up, you move to Yerushalayim, you abandon Hebron. Okay, so you lived with it. Why did you live with it? Because that was David. Because David was David. It was larger than life. So you lived with it. But you have to admit that nobody asked or consulted with the tribe of Judah as to whether or not it was okay to move the capital away from Hebron and to Jerusalem. Nobody consulted with them and said, "Oh, wait a second, but David was, we were loyal to David. David was from one of ours." Here, David goes and he says, "No, we're going to be one big happy family." Well, the tribes of Israel are thrilled, tribe of Judah less so. That's what I call the crack, the seed of discontent. And it sits there, and it, but David, I think, underestimates how discontent, how, what's the word I'm looking for? How non-content, incontent, how upset, how upset the people of Judah really were from all of this, from that moment. Comes Avshalom, who understood that the tribe of Judah more, much far more than he understood the rest of the tribes of Israel. And Avshalom said, "Oh, we're going to build this rebellion." Where does he start it? Right? When Avshalom starts his rebellion, where does he go to start his rebellion? Hebron.
Hebron.
Where does he declare himself king? Hebron. Who does he grab from Hebron to join his rebellion? Achitophel from a city next to Hebron. Everything is, it's a Hebron-centered rebellion because Avshalom understood where the, if you wanted to pile up the anger against David, the perfect place to do it is the one place that has been kind of harboring that anger against David for all these years. And David now understands, the first time he understands the what they have been frustrated with. And so the first thing he does is he says to the people of Judah, "Wait a second, I get it. I understand. You think I'm king over all of Israel, but and I am king over all of Israel, but let's not lose perspective here. Achai atem, you are my brethren. Atzmiu sariatem, you are my brothers. You should come make me king first. We'll start on the east side of the Jordan. We'll come over together. I'll walk up to Gilgal with you. The people of the rest of times of Israel will see that you have a special place at my table." Right? That's right. 30, 20 years ago in Hebron, David would never have done this. But we're now in the post-rebellion world of Avshalom. Now this is really what's going on. I would add one piece to that. I think that's 100% correct. I would just add one piece to it, which is that David has always, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, David has always wanted to downplay the significance of the rebellion of Avshalom. He didn't want to see Avshalom as a political rebellion. He wanted to play Avshalom as the family conflict internally, and so he mourns Avshalom as b'ni, my son, rather than celebrating the end of a rebellion against his leadership. And that too may have played into the effort to call the people of Hebron back and to kind of say, all is forgiven. I forgive Shimon ben Gera. I forgive the tribe of Judah. This isn't about you. This is because the people of Judah, the people of Hebron, they followed Absalom. So part of his effort to forgive Amasa and forgive the tribe of Judah and forgive Shimon ben Gera and to kind of unite everybody is this sense that he's trying to downplay the role of Avshalom. Fine. But I think at its core, what he's done is he's tried to bring Yehuda back into his loyal kind of circle by almost compensating for their many years of feeling second class. We're his own tribe, and he's ignored us. And now David says, okay, let's come back to you and I will come back together. And they together will come and show up in and face the rest of the tribes of Israel. That's more or less the background to this. The consequences of it we'll see in a moment. Before we get to the question of the consequences, I want to point out something very interesting, which is that throughout this parak, and this I shared with you once before, I'm going to actually go back to the source page, and I highlighted them here. Throughout this conversation, from the beginning of the parak until the end, actually, let's go zoom in. This constant description of two groups within the conversation, and those two groups are Shivtei Yisrael, the tribes of Israel, Am Yisrael, Ish Yisrael, however you want to describe it, and Ish Yehuda, Kol Ish Yehuda, right? The people of Judah, the Ish Yehuda, Ish Yisrael and Ish Yehuda are interesting terms because it's not the people of, right? We translate it as the people of Judah, the people of Israel. It's much more significant than that. Ish Yehuda means it's almost military. Right? An army operates as a single entity. The army operates as one voice, much more so than politics. That's for sure. Right? So when you talk about the army of Israel or the army of Judah, you talk about Ish Yehuda and Ish Yisrael. That's almost exclusively a term used to describe an army. Not completely, but very, but certainly in most contexts. And that's certainly true here. Right, Shiftei Yisrael are having a discussion about making David their king. Their king means their commander in chief, and that's exactly what David says to Ziknei Yehuda, to the elders of Judah. So, do you want to be in the same boat? So, Ziknei Yehuda come along and hear that Ish, the Kol Yisrael, that all the tribes of Israel are uniting to proclaim David as the king. The moment David becomes their king, he becomes king over Ish Yisrael, the army of Israel. So Ish Yehuda has to galvanize themselves into becoming what? So understand the language. Ish Yehuda and Ish Yisrael, it's much more than just the people of, but it's a kind of this unifying voice of Israel on the one hand, Judah on the other. And that's really the whole piece of this story. What David has identified here is a conversation between what will eventually become, right? The northern kingdom will be called Israel, and the southern kingdom will be called Judah, right? Yehuda. But the split of the kingdom, Yehuda and Israel, is a long way off, right? Split of the kingdom doesn't happen for another. Got to go through the rest of the days of David, let's say another 10, 12 years, then all the 40 years of Shlomo, and then another couple of years of Rehavam. You're talking about 50, 55, 60 years later. How are we talking about terms of Yisrael and Yehuda? And the answer is that we've been talking about the term of Yehuda and Yisrael as two disparate groups for decades, even I would venture to say centuries. We just haven't noticed it. Meaning, the language of Tanakh, from the very time they cross over the Jordan and they enter into the land of Israel, And Yehuda and Yehoshua says to the people, who's going first to the Goral? And Yehuda answers the call. And Yehuda goes to their tribe, and the rest of the tribes go north. From the very early years of the book of Shoftim, just hundreds of years ago, there's been a tension between the tribe of Judah in the south and the tribes of Israel in the north. And the fault line that runs what is today a crack between Yehuda and the rest of the tribes of Israel will eventually become an all-encompassing fault line that divides the two groups into an irreparable rift between the two kingdoms. But this bridge, this gap, this crack between Yehuda and Yisrael is very old. And what I wanted to spend the remaining time we have this evening looking at is, how far back does this crack go? And what are the consequences of David's actions here? Okay? So to go and understand how far back it goes, I've given you all of the sources on the source page. I'm going to run through them with you so we don't have to look at them on the source page. We're going to actually look at them in the text. But I just want to work our way backwards for a second. Actually, I want to start in the oddest place. I want to start in the book of Shoftim. Actually, I'm going to do this orally rather than through text. But if you remember way back in the book of Shoftim, early leaders, okay, let's talk about Devorah and Barak. If you remember the war in Emek Israel with the chariots of Sisera and Ehud and Barak, and they have this great victory, and Devorah sings a song of victory. What does she sing? She sings about the tribes of Israel. Right? Remember that whole song? Let's take a quick glance at it. I'm keeping an eye on the time. Shmuel, Bet. No, we want to go to Shoftim. We want to go to Shoftim, Perek. Hey. And actually, I want to pull up the map. No map. That's not good. Okay, well, sort of a map. It doesn't really help us much. I thought there was a map here. Okay, this map will do. This is a good map. What happens if I move a parrot? Does that map disappear? Yeah, all right. Devorah sings a song. In her song, she praises the tribes who came to aid Barak in the battle against Sisera. And she criticizes the tribes who remained apart. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We talked about Reuben and the other side of the Jordan. Remember, we talked about the rift that the Jordan River creates between east and west. Okay, and she lists all the tribes that are on her radar. She talks about Reuben, she talks about Ephraim and Manasseh, and she talks about Yisachar and Devorah, and Reuben is sitting between the sheepfolds, listening to the sounds of their sheep. They can't make a decision. Gilad on the other side of the Yarden, Dan is in the north, Asher is in the north, Zebulun, they sacrifice their lives, Naphtali, they put themselves on the line. Then you have you have Binyamin a little bit before, after that. Okay, let's go back to the map. She mentions virtually every region and every tribe of Israel in her song, except for one. She makes absolutely no reference whatsoever to the tribe of Judah. And the Mephoshim are puzzled by that, right? She mentions Reuben and Gad and Manasseh and Naphtali and Asher and Zvulun and Yisachar and Ephraim and Dan. She makes no reference to Judah. Why not? So there's two theories. One is that Judah was too far away from Emek Yisrael to bother with to be able to come and aid. Another theory is that they were too engaged in the south with the Plishtim to be able to come to her aid. So third theory. It just nobody expected Judah to come to the aid of the tribes of the north. Because why should they? Why should they? Yep, that's Judah, and this is the rest of the tribes of Israel. And you begin to sense what is going to become a very significant issue. Remember what I said before about tribal leadership versus kings? Every single shofet. This is a list of every shofet in Israel: Shamgar ben Anat, Elon, Gidon, Ovdan, Ifzan, Devorah, Ehud, Barak, Yair, Yiftach, Shimshon, Otniel ben Knaz. Every tribe of Israel came from a different region. Chazal say there are no two tribes that came from the same shevet. That's not accidental, because tribal leadership is by definition spread out and regional and tribal, and each part is on their own. We talked about this when we talked about the civil wars in the tribe of Sefer Shoftim. There's three civil wars in the tribe of Shoftim. They crossed the Jordan River. Right? It's a time when the tribes, each one is on their own. There's no sense of national identity. The first king, or the first individual who was anointed king, had one mandate, and that was Shaul. He had one mandate. What was his one mandate? What was the one mandate Shaul was charged with more than anything else?
Unite
the tribes of Israel together under one national banner. You are no longer. Katon ata be'enecha, Shmuel says to him, if you think you're small in your own eyes, Rosh Shivtei Yisrael ata, you are the head of the tribes of all the tribes of Israel. That's what you are. One king over all of Israel. That's what Malchus is. By definition, Melech is national rather than tribal. So let's see if he passes that test. The very first time Shaul has to go into battle, very first time Shaul has to go into battle is when? Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph. Remember the sequence of events. Shaul is going looking for his father's lost donkeys. He ends up finding Shmuel. Shmuel says to him, forget your donkeys, they've been found. You are the next king of Israel. Shaul is shocked. He doesn't see it's not him. Why should he be? He's a small tribe. He's a small person. He's not right. You see, humility. Shmuel gives him a series of signs and wonders and miracles and says to him, you're it. Fine. That's all in the end of Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud, chapter 10. It ends with Shaul. Shmuel is hiding, and they threw these lots, and who's going to be the next king? And God says to him, he's here. He's just Nechmal HaKelim. He's just hiding because he doesn't want to be king. We're going to make him be king. Fine. All of that is background. Shaul comes to the fame in the story of the battle of Yavesh Gilad. Chapter 11, the king of Ammon encamps against the city of Yavesh Gilad. And if you remember, Yavesh Gilad is on the other side of the Jordan. Okay, Yavesh Gilad is over here, the other side of the Jordan. And Shaul is from Binyamin. And so the people of Yavesh Gilad are isolated. They're outside the borders. They're on their own. They don't know what to do. They're afraid. Nachash, king of Ammon, is attacking them. They come to Israel and they say, save us. And all the people of Israel are crying and they don't know what to do. And they're kind of, okay. In walks Shaul. V'inei Shaul ba'acharei abakar min ha'sadeh. V'yomer Shaul, ma'lam kivku. Shaul walks in and he says, why are you crying? So they tell them, people of Yavesh are being attacked by the people of Yavesh Gilad, by people of Ammon, and nobody knows what to do. Shaul says, what are you talking about? I know exactly what we do. Here's what we do. He's enveloped in the spirit of godliness and in courage of godliness. There's this moment where he remembers the story of Yavesh Gilad. Binyamin has a particular connection. Yavesh Gilad, that goes back to the story of Pilegesh Begiva, when the tribes were united almost to wipe out the tribe of Binyamin. At this point, Binyamin decides to, and there was a whole episode with Yavesh Gilad there. So he takes a page out of the story of Pilegesh Begiva, only this time he cuts up an animal, sends it out through post. I'm not sure what the Israeli post office wanted to do with those pieces of the ox, but nonetheless, they deliver them And the message was, come now, or this will be your punishment. So, God, the fear of God fell upon the people, and the fear of Shaul. And they came out like one man. So again, I want to come back to that phrase. Ish Yisrael, Ish Yehuda, ki'ish echad. Ki'ish echad means, if Ish Yisrael means the army of Israel, and Ish Yehuda means the army of Judah, what does ki'ish echad mean?
Together.
One army. We translate this phrase in a context typically as one united, ki'ish echad, b'lev echad, right? Kumbaya, everybody's united together. This is a military term. Ish Yehuda means the army of Israel, of Judah. Ish Yisrael means the army of Israel. Ish echad means one army, one king, one voice. Everything good? Right? We're talking the very first Shaul battle. So he brings them all together, and he takes a census, vayifkedem bebazek, and he counted them, because that's what you do with an army. You have to have a structure to an army. Now listen to what happens next. Vayu b'nei Yisrael shlosh miot elef, v'ish Yehuda shloshim elef. The army's size that Shaul counts is, what's the army size? What's the size of Shaul's army? How many soldiers does he have?
330,000.
330,000. Right? That's what it says, correct? Right. But that's really not what it says. What it says is that he has 300,000 in the army of Israel and 30,000 in the army of Judah. Didn't we just say Vayitzu ki'ish echad? That they were one army? Isn't the mandate of the king to unite them into one banner? What is Ish Yisrael and Ish Yehuda doing here? So the truth is, it's irrelevant now because, okay, so there's a separate census for Israel and a separate census for Judah, because they've never really been together, but okay, they're standing next to each other and they have one king. No big deal, because they're all going to fight under one banner, and they win the fight by lunchtime. Right? The battle's over by lunchtime. But bear in mind this observation, that Shaul counts them as two separate armies. Because we're going to fast forward to the battle again, Shaul's most famous battle, which of course is the battle of, what is Shaul most famous for? The battle of? Just, we're in Chodesh Elul's, no said. What's Shaul most famous for? The battle against whom? Almost destroyed Shaul. Battle against Amalek.
Plishtim.
No. Amalek. Battle against Amalek. Plishtim was a minor skirmish. Battle against Amalek. He was mandated. His whole purpose, all his endeavor, was to destroy Amalek. And he failed. That's why it's most famous, because it brought David to the conversation. Shmuel says to Shaul, "Oti shalach Hashem limshacha lemelech al mo'al Yisrael. God brought me to you to anoint you as king over all of Israel." This was that moment. It's time to hold Amalek accountable for all they've done to Israel. And he goes to the whole methodology of Amalek. I'm going to skip that for now. And he says to him, "It's time for you to go and destroy Amalek." Fine. That's the mandate. Well, he succeeded, didn't succeed, not my issue right now. My issue is Pasuk Dalet. Vayishama Shaul ta'am. Shaul summoned the people together. Vayifka'em batleim, and he counted them. Army of Israel united under the banner of Shaul. Matayim elef ragli. Saret alafim et ish Yehuda. 200,000. And another 10,000 from Ish Yehuda. I'm astounded. What do you mean from 200,000 and 10,000 from Judah? How do you count an army that way? But that seems to be the way Shaul counted the army. And nobody's bothered by it because it's just the way it is. And this notion that there's just two groups within the tribes of Israel, Yehuda and the rest of the tribes, has been at the core of a constant theme along the way. It's this crack and this fault line that's just been there. Just jump a couple of chapters forward for a second, just to kind of pull a random sampling. Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Chet. This is David after the Battle of Goliath, and David is actually, you know, we can even go back to the Battle of Goliath itself. After David kills Goliath, there is an attempt to go and fight against the Plishtim. So after David fights, kills Goliath, the Plishtim run. Vayakumu anshei Yisrael v'Yehuda v'Ariel v'Yedafu the Plishtim. Every time the army of gets together and starts to go, it's the army of Israel and Judah. It's and we just read it, we just flows off our tongue, but we don't stop to think about the fact that, like, doesn't that run contrary to the essence of what Malchus is about? Or when David comes back from victory, and David and Shaul and the people are singing his songs of and singing his praise, and the people David gets very Shaul gets very jealous, and he throws the spear at him, and David has to run for his life. David, Shaul gets rid of him, and he says, "Go away from me," right? David maskil. David was successful in everything he did. God was with him. Shaul saw that David was very successful and he was afraid of him. But David was loved by all of Israel and by Judah. Again, you can't talk about the Jewish people without talking about Israel and Yehuda. It's fascinating. We're 100 years before the split of the kingdom. But from the days of the Shoftim, from the early years of Sefer Shoftim, this fault line between the tribes of Judah, the tribes of Israel, and the tribe of Judah has been there. And even Shaul's attempt to unite the kingdom together, Shaul from Binyamin. So Binyamin and all the tribes to the north is Yisrael, and there's also Yehuda in the south. And they function as one, but are they really one? Right? That's the question.
It's 1A and 1B.
That's the problem. It's 1A and 1B. And then into all of this, in walks David after the battle of the rebellion of Absalom. And he says to the tribe of Judah, Achayatem, Atzmiv, they're all Shiftei Israel, they're all deliberating. Fine, they'll make a decision. In the meantime, Ish Yehuda, come back to me. So Ish Yehuda comes back to him first. And by the time he shows up in Gilgal, right, he crosses over the yard and he comes together to Gilgal with all of Ish Yehuda. V'nei kol Ish Yisrael ba'im al ha-melech. And they say to him, "What are you doing? How could you allow Ish Yehuda to take you first and to crown you and essentially cause us to miss the coronation? What are we, second class?" And now I have an all-out conflict between Ish Yehuda and Ish Yisrael back and forth. Right? There's an all-out conflict going on. So David may have done the correct thing politically in terms of reaching out to the tribe of Judah, who are feeling this discontent, who have fueled the rebellion of Absalom, might have been the correct thing, but wasn't the smart thing to do. Because what he's done is he's poured literally gasoline into this and thrown a match into this gasoline, into this fault line, which was a tiny little crack until this moment. And this tiny little crack is about to become much bigger. We're going to move two verses forward into chapter 20. Basham Nikra Ish Blial. There, amongst the crowd, was an Ish Blial. Who is this Ish Blial? Shmo Sheva ben Bikri, Ishimini. From the tribe of Binyamin, member of the name of Sheva ben Bikri. Vetka b'shofar, blows the shofar. Vayomer, and he says, remember this phrase. Rabbi, remember this phrase. I'm going to test you on it. Okay? Ein lanu chelek b'David v'lo nachala lanu b'ven Yishai ish lo alav Yisrael. That's it. We're done with David. No portion in David, no inheritance in the son of Yishai. We're done with him. Every man of Israel, back to your tents. Vayao kol ish Yisrael me'acharei David. All out rebellion. Before it was an internal conflict within the family, within the tribe of Judah. Not anymore. Sheva ben Bichri leads Ish Yisrael away from the party. All David comes back to Yerushalayim. And now he has to deal with a full-scale rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri. So I'm not going to spoil any spoiler alerts of what's going on in the future. David will take Amasa ben Yeter, then he'll take Yoav, and he'll send them to run after Sheva ben Bichri. You take out Sheva ben Bichri, rebellion dies before it starts. And that's exactly what they do. They kill Sheva ben Bichri, who's insubordinate and guilty of treason. Rebellion dies before it starts. But listen to this phrase. Ein lanu chelek b'David v'lo nachala b'ven Yishai. Ish le'olav Yisrael. The harshness of that phrase is jarring. This isn't just a rebellion. This is an all-out rift. We are no longer part of the people that are led by David. And they heal that rift. They put down the rebellion. Done. However, we're never done. Not anymore. And I want to show you what happens next. So the rest of the story, I've told you this before, after chapter 20, Sefer Shmuel really ends. There's four chapters left that are a postscript to the book of Shmuel. They're much earlier events. Chronologically, we go from chapter 20, which is the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri, which ends here, to the beginning of the book of Kings. You with me? Yeah? To the beginning of the book of Kings. In the beginning of the book of Kings, David is on his deathbed, and David makes all kinds of instructions, and gives instructions to Shlomo, and David dies in chapter 3, in chapter 2. By the time we get to chapter 3, Shlomo has to deal with some loose ends from the world of David. Chapter 4 begins with the reign of Shlomo. Vayhi ha-melech Shlomo melech al kol Yisrael. Shlomo is king over all of Israel. Why is he king over all of Israel? Why is that significant? Because there's no split in the kingdom. He's literally king over, right? David has brought them all back together. They're all, now he's put down the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri. It's one big happy family, supposedly. One big kingdom. Melech al kol Yisrael. Everybody with me? Okay. And he has officers, and he tells you who's who in the kingdom in his cabinet. That's first thing you do when you become king, you become leader, you set up a cabinet. Not our issue. All right. I want to start with Pasuk Zion. V'lishlomo shneimasar nitzavim al kol Yisrael. Shlomo has 12 deputies, representatives, whom he appoints over all of Israel. Why does he need 12 deputies? Right? Because he's a big kingdom. Right? He's a very big. Let's see if there's a map here. Is there a map here? No, no map. Okay. He's a big kingdom. Kingdom of Shaul is enormous. The kingdom of David and Shlomo. It's enormous. It goes all the way up to Syria, all the way up to Aram. So it's a very big kingdom, and he needs deputies, ministers, regional powers who will run the country. Fine. So his financial operation works as follows. V'chilkelu at ha-melech v'et beto chodesh b'shana. 1 month a year, each one of these 12 nitzavim was responsible for providing all of the financial foundation for the government. Meaning, instead of taxing everybody all the time, and now you have to wonder about, you know, income tax and federal tax and provincial tax and all kinds of taxes, much more efficient to take the 12 regions of the country and say each one of you is responsible for 1 month a year. You fund the government for 1 month, and then you're done. A very simple system, right? Agree? Yeah. I mean, you're there. I got verbal canal. Everybody, we're good. Okay. And so I have these people. Why 12?
Is it the 12 tribes? 12 months.
12 tribes. It's perfect. Right? And these are their names and the regions from which they come. Okay? There a map here? Let's see if there's a map here. No map. All right. I'll show you a map in a few minutes. These are the names and these are the regions in which they come. Ben-Chor in Har Ephraim. Ben-Deker in places like Makatz and Shalabim and Beit Shemesh and Elon and Beit Hanan. Where all these places are, I'll show you on a map. Don't worry about figuring them out. Ben Chesed was in Arubot and was in charge of Socho and Chefer. Then you have Ben Avinadav and he's in Nofat Dor and Tofat Bat Shlomo. Etal Elisha, he had a wife, daughter of Shlomo. Ba'ana ben Achilud, Ba'ana son of Achilud was in Tanach and Megiddo and in Beit Shan and a few other places. Then you have Ben Gever in Ramot Gilad. He was in charge of Chavot Yair and Ben Minashe, Shebi Gilad. And then you have Achinadav in Machanaim, and then you have Achimatz in Naphtali, and you have Ba'ana in Asher in Alot, and Yoshafat in Yisachar, and Shimi ben Ela in Binyamin, and Geber ben Uri in Eretz Gilad, Eretz Sichon, Malach Amori, Og Malach Bashan. And this is Unetziv Echad Asher al Aretz. Okay, so that's the 12 Nitzivim. Yudav Yisrael Rabim Kachol Asher Alayam Larov. Oh, what a nation Judah and Israel are. Multitudes like the sand of the sea. Great. Ochlim, Shotim, Smechim. Eating, drinking, rejoicing, living happily, every man under his victory. All good. Right? Everything's great. Quick geographic picture of these 12 regions. So, unfortunately, it's not, the map's not here, so I'm going to show you the map. Let me just pull it up. Apologize for that. It's not on the source page, but I want to pull up the full size of it. Hang on a second. So that's the, I don't know if you can see it yet. Okay, that's not going to work. Let's do... Well, actually, let me pull that map up also. Can you see the? I'm not sure what you're seeing.
Black.
Okay. You seeing a map? This map is the entire kingdom of Shlomo and David. Starts here in Edom, in the Negev. Goes all the way up, including both sides of the Yarden, includes what is today Transjordan, all the way up. It doesn't include the coast of Lebanon, but it includes certainly what is today Syria and Aram, all the way up to the Euphrates River. It's the largest regional spans of the tribes of Israel and the land of Israel, the kingdom of Israel, or the empire in the history of Tanakh. Okay? This map doesn't show me the 12 Nitzavim. So I will show you a map that does. 12 Nitzavim. Yes? That's what we're up to, 12 representatives. Here's a map of all 12. Okay? Starting with Har Ephraim. And the list went Har Ephraim, then Beit Shan, Ayalon and Bet-Shemesh. Then Gimel was here in Arubot and Socho and Chefer. Dalet was Nofet Dor. Hey was Beit Shan. Vav was Ramot Gilad. Zion was here in Nachayabok and Sertan. Chet was here in Naphtali. Tet was Asher. Yud is Yisachar. Yud Aleph is up here in, where is Yud Aleph? Here is Yud Aleph is Givon in Binyamin. And 12 is Eretz Sichon. 12 Nitzavim to run the financial foundation of the kingdom of Dave, of Shlomo. All good? Right? Everything's happy, right?
You
12
would think that
Nitzavim.
it would be by tribe.
Excuse me? You would think it's
I
by
think.
tribe, but in some ways it's actually better not to be by tribe because it's regional, meaning the tribal divisions at this point are a little bit mixed. Number one, and number two, you're much better off dividing them by region because region is more geographically accessible and makes more sense. So I get that it's regional. That doesn't bother me so much. Does anybody find anything odd about the list of 12?
Yeah, there's nobody for Yehuda.
Correct. There is no Netziv designated for Shevet Yehuda. Now that in itself is odd, but it's especially odd considering the fact that what was the role of each one of these representatives?
To be financial backing.
To financially support the king and the government. So where is Yehuda in that picture? Exempt? 12 months, 12 Nitzavim. And Yehuda? Would they get the leap year? What happened to Shevet Yehuda? And if we understand this notion that Shevet Yehuda was exempt, we begin to understand what is going on in the remaining portions of the Book of Kings. And now we're going to have to jump through a lot of it because we lost a few minutes. But if you give me, and if you'll just stay with me for a few extra minutes, I apologize. But from that point forward, David Shlomo is singularly focused on building the Beit HaMikdash. And nobody's going to argue, man who builds a Beit HaMikdash and sets Yerushalayim on its mountain on top and the temple and everything's great. And Perek Vav is building and his Perek Zayin is building and Perek Chet he's inaugurating and everything's great. And in Perek Tet, he is continuing to build and he's building and he's building. When he bu finishes building that temple, he builds everything he can possibly want and he builds warehouses and storehouses and cities to have and his throne. Yeah, well, Shlomo's throne is so famous. And Shlomo built, the only king of Israel who ever built more than Shlomo was Herod. Just to put in perspective. Herod saw himself as a kind of a late version of Shlomo. And then, of course, Shlomo fails. Shlomo falls into many of the traps of kingship and arrogance, which is not a discussion for now. And we get to Perek Yud Aleph. And Shlomo loves Nashim Nachuyot, and he has many wives, and they lead his heart astray, and they lead him to idolatry, and all kinds of things going on in Shlomo, and the seeds of rebellion are beginning to grow. Yeravam, now listen to this phrase, Yeravam ben Nevat Ephrati. There was a young guy. His name was Yeravam ben Nevat. He's the one who eventually will split the kingdom apart. He's from Ephrat. And Yishalmanah, Eved L'Shlomo, V'yarim Yad B'melech. And his story is he led the rebellion against the king. And this is the story. V'zeh Adavah Sherim Yad B'melech. This is what caused him to lead this rebellion. Shlomo Banat HaMilos, Garet Peretz Ir David. Shlomo built and he built and he built and he built. And who was responsible? Who was to look after all of this building? V'ha'ish Yeravam, Gibor Chayil. Yeravam was a warrior. V'yar Shlomo et na'a k'yosei melacha. When Shlomo saw this young, industrious man by the name of Yeravam, Gibor Chayil, who was strong, he was young, he was capable. So he put him in charge. What did he put him in charge of? ויפקדם אותו לכל סבל בית יוסף. He put him in charge of the labor of the house of Joseph. Why is the building campaign called Sevel Beit Yosef? Isn't that an odd phrase? When you think about the fact that there was one tribe in the kingdom of Shlomo that was exempt because they were the tribe of the king, they were the privileged class, if you will, you understand that the rest of the tribes were in charge of financing the rest of the campaign. By this point in time, it's now become known as Sevel Beit Yosef. And the rest of the story, you know, Shlomo HaMelech encounters the Navi. The Navi says he's going to split the kingdom away from him. Shlomo dies, and Yerachavam takes over in Shechem, Yerachavam, son of Shlomo. And Yerachavam is in the exile in Mitzrayim. He's called back. I'm not going to get into the whole issue. But he finally comes to Yerachavam. And now you understand the issue. Because all these years, the representation of the tribes of Israel has been distorted. 12 Nitzavim to finance the kingdom from the from Ish Yisrael, and Ish Yehuda is exempt. So finally, Yerachavam comes to Yerachavam. And he says to him, they have a whole conversation. Let's start from the beginning of the conversation. וישלחו ויקראו לו ויבוא ירבעם בכל קהל ישראל ויתבעו רחבעם. So they come to רחבעם and they offer the following observation. אביך הקשת עלינו. Your father caused the yoke to us to be great. ואתה הקל מעבודת אביך הקשה. Lighten the load a little bit. מלוא הכבד שנתן עלינו. ונבדקה, we'll be loyal to you. Just lighten the load a little bit, maybe share it a little bit, maybe include your own tribe, maybe. Okay, 3 days later, Rechavam comes to them, he's consulted with the Zgenim, he's consulted with the Tzirim, with the young ones, he's come up with the answer. What's the answer? He comes to them and he says, Vayarko Yisrael, Kilo Shema Melech Alehem, this is what he said to them. My father made your yoke heavy. I'm going to make it even heavier. My father chastised you with whips. I will chastise you with scorpions. So when you get a response like that from the king, no surprise that the next thing is rebellion. Correct? Now, remember when I said to you to remember a verse, keep it memorized? This verse that Sheva ben Bichri pronounced? What was it? Ein lanu chelek b'David v'lo nachala b'ven Yishai ish lo alav Yisrael. Remember that verse? We don't have any, right? We're enough. We're done. So Yeravam ben Nevat, 50 years later, Vayar ko Yisrael ki lo shema melech alehem, saw that the king was not listening. Vayashivu ha'am et ha'melech davar lemor. So the people responded. And what was the response? Ma lanu chelek b'David v'lo nachala b'ven Yishai lo'alecha Yisrael. What portion do we have in David or in the inheritance of the son, or the malchus, the inheritance, the legacy of the house of Yishai? To your tents, O Israel. Vayelech Yisrael lo alav. Sound familiar? Talk about a page right out of the book of Sheva ben Bichri. Becomes the foundation of the split of the kingdom of Yerevam. For all the right reasons, because Rechavam and Yishlomo had done all the wrong things by favoring their tribe of Shlomo, of Yehuda. You see, understand the pattern. But it's a pattern that starts when David HaMelech invites the tribe of Yehuda to have a special seat at the party that restores him to the throne. And if you think I'm overreacting to this response, I will conclude the shiur today, the final quote. In the midst of all of this, we had that little episode with Mephibosheth. Remember the story with Mephibosheth? Oddly placed in the middle of the story because it happens later when he comes to Yerushalayim. And to Mephibosheth from the tribe of Benjamin, David poured out all of his angst and frustration over Yonatan and Shaul, and he split the estate between Tziva and Mephibosheth. Terrible mistake he made. Says the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, B'sh'ash Amar David leMephibosheth, Ata v'tziva tachlaku et hasadeh. When David said to Mephibosheth, you and Tziva will divide the land, Yatzta bat kol v'amra lo, a voice emerged from heaven and proclaimed, Rechavam v'yiravam yachlaku et hamelacha. Rechavam and Yeravam will divide the kingdom. And Chazal saw in this chapter and all of its facets, I don't think it's just about Mephibosheth, but I think it's about the whole story and David's reaction and David's favoritism to Judah and David's dismissal of Benjamin and all of the pieces of the puzzle, the frustration of the tribes of Israel and the celebration of the tribe of Judah and all the mistakes David makes here, in the language of the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri, become the foundation of the rebellion of Yerubam ben Nevat and the split of the kingdom. Say Chazal, that's exactly what happened. Rechavam and Yerubam will split the kingdom. And from that split, in the context of Tanakh, we will never recover. It'll take centuries till we recover from that division. And ultimately, the northern tribes go into exile and never come back. And we're left with just Judah and we're all Jews because we're named after the tribe of Judah. And the tragedy of that rift, which starts as a... I'm going to stop sharing for a second. It starts as a crack, a fault line, a perspective that there's the tribes of Israel, says Shaul, and there's the tribe of Judah. And to divide the army into Ish Yehudah and to Ish Yisrael. And suddenly there's this civil war, Benjamin, David, Shaul, David, Ishbosheth, another civil war. Then there's an internal strife from the tribe of Judah. And by the time it's all done, David makes the one mistake he promised he really set himself up never to make, which is to separate out the tribe of Judah from the rest of the tribes of Israel. The result, say Chazal, is the seeds of rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri will become the language of revolt of the rebellion of Yerubam and Nevat, and eventually split the kingdom apart. And we have to wait for the Nevuah and the prophecy of Yechezkel to reunite the tribe of Judah and Israel to ultimately undo the damage that was done here. That's the story of the return of David to the throne. It's a tragedy in the moment. Correct decisions, but not smart decisions. And ultimately, the price that they paid for it had consequences for generations to come. Okay, that's not really where I wanted to end in that kind of a moment, but I think but you understand the context. This is the end of chapter 19 for our discussion. I apologize for going a few minutes late, but I lost 10 minutes in the middle because of the failure of my technology. We have no class next week because I am away. So I will make up for the extra 15 minutes today by giving you all of next week off.
Oh, lovely.
We'll reconvene Bezrat Hashem in 2 weeks' time and start chapter 20.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, I understand the connection and the comparison of the psukim. Who is Sheva ben Bachri?
Next class.
I mean,
next class. Yeah, we know nothing about him.
I mean, what kind of status did he have that people listen to?
We know nothing about him yet. That we have to build the background and what's going on and who he is and. We haven't gotten the yeah. I just wanted to identify the fact that David's decision leads directly to the rebellion.
That I understand. Okay.
The rest of it we'll deal with B'ezrat Hashem next week or 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks. Okay.
Have fun, Thank everybody. You. Enjoy.
Thanks.
Thank you.